I'd like everyone to welcome Ed from Design for Living Group from Wall, New Jersey.
Hello, everybody. My name is Ed. I'm a recovered alcoholic.
Hi, Ed.
Great to be here. My home group is Sunday Night Design for Living in Wall Township, New Jersey. We meet 7 to 8 o'clock. It's a big book study. We have speakers come up, share their experience, strength, and hope with the literature. And, I don't even live in Wall Township anymore, but we travel, over and over change to get to that meeting. Because I took a commitment at that meeting, and that's where I spent. I just want to take a minute to, thank Jeff for having me come here and speak. I want to take a minute to welcome the newcomer. That's the definitely the most important person in this room. I came into fellowship this last time with absolutely nothing. Absolutely broken, with absolutely nothing, with nowhere to go. And there were people there to guide me in the right direction. They didn't care so much about my sensitive feelings, but they were there to tell me the truth. The responsible members of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I owe my life to those people and this fellowship. It's funny, me and my girlfriend were just talking before this meeting. I was like, it's a big group and everything, but I think I'm more nervous that you're here. she says, why? Because you have to tell the truth. I think it would probably be easier to come here and, wear the AA jacket, because the beer jacket doesn't fit so well all the time. And, I'll come in. My stage character will be, I'm this super guy in AA, and look how spiritual I am. I apply these principles daily, never fall short. I'm always up on, my inventories and making, the recommendations immediately. And, the more you get to know me, the more you realize I'm so undisciplined, it's not even funny. And I guess I've been raised with a little bit of humility every once in a while that, I can say, and tell somebody some things about me, that I'm human, that I am alcoholic, that I'm hard-headed, and I'm undisciplined. And I'm just so grateful that I've been able to found the power that is disciplined and, is on the way. I spent the weekend in Akron, Ohio. It was my first time I've ever been to Founders Day, and it was unbelievable. The amount of people coming together, fellowshipping, I appreciate the history, and it was a really good thing to see, it was an experience I won't forget. And I get to do these things today. These are things I would never dream of doing while drinking. Things that no one ever invited me anywhere. And it's just so grateful. I know when I walk into a room of Alcoholics Anonymous, I just feel at home. I never really get the feeling that maybe I should go somewhere else. This is where I belong. People were there for me, and I have an obligation to the newcomer and stuff, and that's why I go. I feel almost I'm preaching to the choir in a group like this, It's a wonderful thing, seeing pockets of enthusiasm. Seeing people come in, they know what their primary purpose is, and they show up and they're there. I was taught that, I come to meetings for the newcomer at the place to meet. We meet regularly for the newcomer, and seek the fellowship that they crave. It's an unbelievable thing. You guys will take me in when no one else will. The amount of service and love that is in these rooms is indescribable. And I don't think I'm at work sometimes and I break my anonymity at work. And people are kind of confused on what goes on in these rooms. And words really can't even just give it credit, for some of the miracles and blessings that have been given to me in these rooms. I was the person that would come in and out and someone would buy me something at the diner or buy me a drink or give me a ride, and they were just all you gotta do is turn around and give it to somebody else. And I knew I felt it in my heart. I want to say, I will never be that person. That's never me. I'm gonna continue to take forever. And it's not the case. Okay, so I was thinking the other day, and this is a new part of my story that I wanted to kind of talk about. Maybe, you know, a lot of living in fear when I was, before I really ever picked up a drink. A friend of mine gave me this piece of paper, and it was like a pyramid scheme for baseball cards. It was set up so, you know, and very simply, it was like you have to send out, you know, 2 packs of baseball cards to these different people, and if this chain continues, you know, all these great things will happen to everybody, but nobody can break the chain. And I had to be nothing more than maybe 7 or 8 years old. And he gave me that piece of paper, and I told him I would do it. He did it, and like I had that piece of paper. And I told him, and one day he asked me about it, and I had all intentions of doing it, and I told him I would. And I never did, and it was sitting in my dressing room for a little while. It had the date, and I knew the date was approaching. And I took it, and I put it in the side of my bed. And it was kind of like, I knew that date was approaching, and I knew it was close, or maybe I missed it. And it was kind of like the telltale heart. You know, this piece of paper, 8 years old, was kind of just like calling at me. And I was so fear-driven, and I'll be honest with you, might not believe, but I think over for like 30 days, I was just living in fear. Over, I'm going to be the person that broke this chain, and it feels like my whole world was consumed by that piece of paper. And I didn't even have enough guts at 8 years old to tell anybody about it, or to even reach on the side of my bed to look at the date. And that just came to me the other day, like a memory of 8 years old. You know, growing up in school, I think I was pretty well liked. I played sports, and you know, my parents knew other parents, and I hung around with kids. But in the summertime, we went down to Belmar Beach. It was like the next town over, and there were different kids there. There weren't kids necessarily that I went to school with. And it's not that I didn't fit in, but I guess I wasn't more of a center of attention. It's kind of what I craved. And there was like one or two kids that didn't necessarily like me. Everybody was like a little different. Everybody could surf a little better than I can. You know, everybody can like skimboard a little better than I can. You know, some of them had cooler, cooler bodyboards or cooler wetsuits or any, you know, whatever. And I would just look, even like the way some of them like wore their hat, I was like consumed with it, and I looked at it, and you know what I mean? And it was like, if I could only have a hat just like that, you know? And it was the wildest thing. And we would go down to the beach, and you would think it would be fun for a kid like me, but I wasn't happy then. And all year long, the months and months of approaching summer, I'd be consumed with fear that summer is going to come, and this is what's going to happen. And you know what? And that's only in hindsight, and that's only through the gift of sobriety and inventory that these things were disclosed to me. Because I probably would have the rest of my life, you know, not being able to separate the truth from the false, never seeing these things, never seeing causes and conditions. And it's eye opening. It really, really is. But you know, the first time I drank, you know, it was very early on. You know, my uncle gave it to me. And I was in first grade. And the only reason I remember is like, I guess I had a little girlfriend in first grade. Or somebody I liked, I guess. It wasn't my girlfriend. Somebody who I liked, but that was my girlfriend. And, and you know, he's like, well, who's your girlfriend? And he's like, do it for her. And like, you know, I would drink a couple beers. But like, I like the effect where, like, I was hanging around with all him, you know, they were in their 20s, I was hanging around with all them, I was not hanging out with grandma, it was, like, upstairs, and it was, like, a cool atmosphere, you know, the bumper pool table, the bar, you know what I mean, everyone seemed like he was having a good time, and, you know, and I liked it, but, you know, I guess the only thing that really matters was the, you know, the first time that actually alcohol had an effect on me. You know, and nothing really crazy happened, you know, but once I took a drink, seems like everything kind of went away. I was starting to feel right. I was like, yeah, you know, and I found a solution that worked. And, you know, and at the age of 17, I started you know, I seemed like, you know, the social drinking and everything like that, I knew I was a little bit different than other people. I was driving five kids in high school when I got up to 17. It was a Wednesday afternoon. Went back to this friend's house, and you know, I started drinking a bottle of Jack Daniels, and this is like, you know, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I had five people in my 1986 Oldsmobile back to my friend's house. Started drinking, and we were going to get, you know, some other stuff. We get in the car, and yeah, you know, of course, I'm in my town, and they see five kids in the car. I'm just 17 years old. They pull us over, and I ended up getting a DUI at 17 years old on a Wednesday afternoon at, you know, 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And you know, no future. I mean, I lost my license for a couple months. You know, my my wrestling coaches, you know, were like, "Wow!" Opened up the paper, you know, read in the paper, you know, that I had a DUI. They knew, you know, I was hanging out with the wrong kids, but like, you know, I'm that guy. You know, even since a young age, you know, like let's say one of our friends would, like, throw up and get sick, and we have to like go get the parents or something like that. Like, I just felt like I was the troublemaker kid. I had, like, long hair in high school. I wore, like, you know, Grateful Dead t-shirts. I had earrings coming out of every hole in my face. And they just, like, seemed like, I probably was, like, don't get me wrong, I probably was, like, the influential kid. But it's almost like, I don't know, like, it's like a stage character. Like, this is who I am. Everybody thinks this is who I am, so I might as well be that person. And, you know, I just didn't even care. I was a three varsity lettering athlete as a freshman. But I also, you know what I mean, I was like, I smoked cigarettes, but I was you know what I mean, an athlete. It was a strange thing. But, I knew alcohol and non-conscious food stuff was starting to control my life. I knew. I really did. And when I realized that I could feel completely okay and completely right with drink, I was like, wow, this is a great solution. I can just watch TV and relax, and everything's going to be smooth. And this is what my mind was telling me, that this was all it's going to take. Like, let's say it was like half a drink, you know, fill a half a cup of Jameson, and the effect produced by that was sitting on the couch and hanging out. I thought that was going to be it. Like, no progression, no real big consequences, nothing. Like, this was going to be it. This drink was my solution to everything. And I didn't need anybody. So kind of like all of, like, the same situation with those kids at the beach, all these people kind of went away. Like, those things didn't exist for me. My wrestling coaches, my parents, grade, school, these were all obstacles in the way of that moment. You know what I mean? The ease and comfort that comes by taking a few drinks. Everything in life was just kind of like side plots to the event, which is feeling well. And, you know, I chased that. You know, if I wasn't in fear that I wouldn't fill up this hour, I would try not to even tell the rest of my story. Because maybe sometimes I feel like, you know, if I were to qualify, you know, and tell my story, I might, like, disqualify some people in this room. I am the real alcoholic of the hopeless variety. I've heard many, many fifth steps. I've yet to hear a fifth step that pales in, you know, anything in comparison. I'm a bottom barrel drunk and drug addict. And I've definitely hit the skids. And, you know, and some of my story, I had to go back into my past and really, like, find out, like, what happened. But here it goes, you know. Sometimes when I'm, like, looking for speakers, I don't even want to, like, really hear too much solution anymore. I just, like, want to be entertained. Anybody like that? Like, I just want to hear some jokes and laugh and, you know, have a newcomer hear some solutions. But, okay, I graduated from high school, and instead of going to college, I went to, like, trade school. I became, you know, a union electrician. My dad is. So, you know, this seemed like, it's not like what I wanted to do, but it was, like, really the only option. So I started working. It was way up in North Jersey. I'm from South Jersey, and the ride was kind of killing me, and the alcohol was really consuming my life. And I just thought, hey, you know, it's time to grow up. I'm going to move away from all my friends, because if I could just, you know, get myself out of the situation, separate myself from people, that, you know, I'm going to be okay. And I moved up to an attic apartment. Salem's like this island that like you would never go to or like drive through for anything. It was like the most isolated little, I was there, I had to go to the store, and people were like, oh, you're from, I never seen you, you're from Bayonne, you weren't, and I'm like, no, they're like, well, you weren't born in Bayonne, why are you here? But I convinced myself that if I just separated myself from other people, that my life would take a new direction, unknowing that, I'm different than other people, and when I go, my disease is there, and instantly, my life became now isolated from the rest of the world. And all I had to look forward to after work was a bottle and some sleeping pills or something. And that was my life. I was anxious to go to the package store or something and just go home from where I'm 18 years old. And my only purpose in life is to feel well from drink. And I couldn't separate that truth from boss. I didn't really even know what was going on. I remember in desperation, I started going into, because I've heard of 12-step fellowships. There was a whisper of it. I've heard of it. I didn't know where you guys hung out or anything. I can't keep my life together, but I'm ashamed to actually ask for help from somebody. I have a problem, and where can I go get help? And I started going to stores and reading the community paper and stuff, and maybe in the back somewhere, AA's or something would be hidden. And I just didn't see it. And I saw a church. I'm like, I'm gonna go into that church. I'm just gonna say I'm screwed. I don't know what's going on. And I came home that night and I just sat there. And there's this little phone book. I kind of swiped it from the person downstairs. I don't know. I don't even have cable. I don't have TV. I have nothing going on. When I say I had an apartment, I'm living. I told my girlfriend about a hot place. She didn't even know what a hot place was. I had a hot place. That's all. In this apartment, no microwave, a mini fridge that barely worked. And I got nothing going on in my life, really. And I picked up the paper. And at the time, I had insurance. So I call the first landline in my city, and they're like, well, we have great news. Come to Florida. We're going to pick you up. You're going to take a plane there. Everything, problems. I was like, problem solved. And my friends tell me, no, I wouldn't go. I don't think you need, they were just telling me different options. And I just knew how serious my condition was. I was dying. And then I went and off, flew to Florida. I thought I was going to be fixed. I thought that was it. Wow, I dug the ditch. Now it's, But if I would have known then, not even what I know now, but even what I know a couple years later, all I had was $40,000. Well, what I had in my insurance covered $40,000 inpatient lifetime. Well, this treatment center cost every penny of that. Trust me. And I came back nice and tan. They were telling me about, I saw the steps on the wall. They wanted me to memorize the first three steps. Gave me a couple Gorski stuff, Trigger stuff. I think I read a couple Hazelden books, and I heard when I got out of that thing was go to meetings. Keep on your meds. With a combination of meds and meetings and whatever other stuff they gave me, balls and these things, you will be well on your way. And I was wow, okay. And I came back and, don't stick around, sit down, stick around, make 90 days, and, cool. I was okay. So about, 15 days into it, the internal condition was so bad in me. My parents, I moved back into my parents for a little while, and they didn't want me to have a car. They didn't want to leave. So people were picking me up to go to meetings. I had every intention of never drinking again. I told my parents, I'm done. I'm not drinking. I don't drink anymore. They're like, you can pop those. I'm like, nothing. I'm not doing anything. And people would pick me up at the meeting, and I would see some face. People were some people were happy. People were going to diners. People were doing all these dances and all this kind of stuff. And I'm slowly dying. Dying. And in hindsight, I can see, I was without defense. I didn't have a choice whether to pick up or not. And, you know, the internal condition in me got so bad after about 15, 20 days, you know, I'm back. And started a little bit. It wasn't like, oh, maybe you should go, you know, go to Newark and go do heroin. It was more like, you could probably smoke a joint now. You know, like, you know, you can probably go back to the party and let's try some social drinking. And you know what? I'm blessed that, you know, I've recycled every old every idea to get around the not drinking thing, because drinking isn't a problem for me. Drinking is the solution. And everything, and, you know, I'm just keeping my life together. Like, there were moments when things were good. And that's the kicker. Like, there were moments in my life when it seems like all the stars were coming together. And I was like, I really have this thing under control, you know? And then, you know, I'd, like, set the mark. And I'd be like, I'd only do this much. I won't do this kind of combination. I won't do this. And, you know, but sometimes I would go over that mark, the lack of control. And, you know, and I'm starting to get myself into the jackpot. I mean, I don't even want to know where to begin. But, you know, I started, you know, blacking out in the car. Because I was driving, like, long distances, and I was starting to black out of the car. I was starting to do some crazy things, and, you know, I never really had too many big consequences. And nothing against, like, I don't even want to say against my parents, because I'm an adult at this point. But, like, no one was really, you know, it was just pretty much me, and, you know, people cared about me, cared what I did. But, like, you know, and my hand wasn't forced on anything, so it was like, you know, get some, you know, whatever. And, I mean, I can just tell you that, you know, I started going to, you know, I know it's not all clones, but, you know, I started going to methadone clinics. I started going to doing this. I started going to doing that. I started, you know, going to detoxes for 3, 5, 7 days, you know. And it seems like through the treatment centers, you know, the amenities or whatever, like all the cool stuff that the rehab started getting worked, like, less and less. Like, the second one didn't have a pool, you know what I mean? Like, it was starting to, like, you know what I mean, diminish the various places. And by that time, I didn't have any insurance money left. You know, I used the outpatient money. They had $20 on the outpatient. I tried that. And by this time, I started getting, like, you know, arrested for little things, you know, here and there. I couldn't control myself. And, you know, I'm just going to make a long story short. You know, I tried. So, in my mind, I tried Alcoholics Anonymous. I tried the 12-step fellowships. You know, I never did that in my life. I tried it, and I was convinced that it didn't work. Just absolutely convinced. You know, I've gotten a sponsor. I've gotten a coffee commitment. The alcoholic of my type goes to meetings. Once, gives every solemn oath out there. Once, I wanted to get sober. Honestly, guys, I gave every intention to get sober, and could not pull it off. You know, I could for a short period of time, and that's what I always went back to. Well, I had the 30 days. Well, I had the 60. Maybe I had 60 days. And you know, the consequences started getting greater and greater. And that's the gist of the story. There came 19 rehabs later. I'm sitting in my bed. And I didn't really want to die, but I definitely didn't want to live anymore. And I almost got comfortable with the fact that I knew I was going to die in alcoholics. I was going to die in alcoholics. There's no way I'm making it. And I ended up going to another treatment center where I finally, somebody, you know, all the kids in the treatment center were talking, some kids were talking about, you know, the sponsor sneaking in a message, and these guys were working steps. And I'll call it the grace of God, because I never made it. Myself. I ended up talking with this guy, and you know, he sat me down, and he started talking about a little bit of history, but he also like kind of reeled me in with a couple stories for identification purposes, and it was just amazing how things started happening. But I started reading the literature, and I started doing steps with this guy, and I stayed at this treatment center for 5 weeks, and you know, I had a spiritual awakening as a result of 8.5 steps. You know, and I got out of that treatment center with a head full of knowledge and a little bit of the grace of God, and this alcoholic didn't do anything. I started going to meetings. I started talking about this new literature, talking about, you know what I mean? I finally understood. I was qualified for the first time in that treatment center. You know, all these other treatment centers I went to, they're like, you know, have you ever blacked out? Have you ever pissed your pants? How much drugs do you take? How many sanitizers a day do you do? It's not enough. And then people just say, oh, you're in the right place. You're in the right place. You know, if someone says that to you, you know, you need to know what the questions they're asking you. You know, some of the simple qualifying questions they're never asking. When you could be telling me about this, you know, the allergy, phenomenon of craving, things like that, all my lack of control, how the first 60 pages of the book are talking about step one, they give you all these different analogies, that they didn't really suck to me, because I was like, wow, me, and then if that's the case, you're suffering from a disease that's only a spiritual experience or concept. Now, like, you know what I mean, I'm like my back to the wall, and I'm like, this is my opportunity. And when the result, because I kind of believed them. I don't know, maybe I was graced to believe them, but I had no other options. You know what I mean? Like, I started doing steps by default. You know, circumstances made me willing. And, like I said, you know, I felt this new power flow in that I've never felt from any other thing in the world. You know what I mean? I was kicking ass. Like, it felt so good. I'm like, I was walking a little higher. And what I remember, like, now, this one moment, and that's what I searched for my whole life, moment. Like, moments, you know, moments of life. I had that moment all of a sudden, like, I kind of, like, Bill's analogy, when, you know, like a clean wind blew through, a mountaintop blew through. I was, like, walking, and I was floating, and it felt good. And I knew it was a result of what the action I was taking. So I left that treatment center, and I didn't complete the rest of the work. You know, I didn't. I stopped feeling so good, and I don't know why, but, you know, I don't know. I'm just so undisciplined, hard-headed, and I'm a jackass. You know, and I guess I wasn't really convinced of the faith in Caesar. I was convinced that, like, I'm so self-centered that, like, that may be okay for you. Like, you guys have to work the steps and everything and complete it. But me, you know, I've always been a little different, you know, and that was what I thought. And, you know, what I can say is, you know, I ended up doing a lot more of the worst things. I hurt a lot of people. You know, I mean, I think these situations where, you know, people were, my brother was willing to pay for another treatment center for me. And after this, you know, I knew that was and you know what? Progression was so bad for me after a while. I'm not talking about like months and months or years of relapse. I'm talking about like 3 weeks and I'm ODing like twice. You know, in that time period, I'm crashing my car into the Raritan toll plaza at 60 miles an hour, falling asleep, waking up, you know, in the other side of my car. I'm talking about absolute insanity, where I wasn't going to make it another week, and he was like, here, this is where I got to go somewhere. And while they're trying to set up a treatment center for me, I mean, I'm not licensed at this point, I have a second to lie. While they're trying to call treatment centers and trying to get me in somewhere, I steal their car and run. You know what I mean? Like, and this is not something I wanted to do. I love my family, you know? But that alcohol was my master. And, you know, it made my decisions for me. The most important thing in my life, I wasn't trying to get ripped. I was trying to get right inside. You know, I knew there was a solution out there. You know, euphoric recall, sometimes you feel from... For the alcohol or whatever, like, you know, I know what I did for a while. I had a euphoric recall for a spiritual awakening. I remember that there was a little glimmer of hope in me because I knew that power I felt was absolute real. That's the most real I felt in my entire life. And I knew it was there and I knew it was available. You know? And, the sponsor that I had while I was in that treatment center, he was living in Florida. And, I actually got on a plane and went down to Florida. And I was like, I was convinced. I was like, it was him. My sponsor was the answer. And if I could just get there, everything would be okay. And, you know, and I get down there, and I try to check myself in a detox. By the time I'm getting kicked out of the detox, I'm doing drugs inside the detox, and I'm running around Overtown, Miami, like a maniac. You know? Like a maniac. And, you know, and I don't know why, but, you know, we started doing some step work, and the allergy had me so bad. You know, I just didn't have it in me. I didn't have it in me, and I just kept on going, and I don't know why. But my parents ended up flying me back after being homeless, and they said, you know, get a good meal, and you're gone. Yeah. I'm like, well, I want to get sober. We don't care. Get sober, don't get sober. You're not here. You know what I mean? Nobody cared if I got sober or not. Nobody wanted to get out. you know, like that, I have that feeling like when I'm locked up and I don't have anybody to call, I'm 25 years old and I can't think of one person that I could even call to get commissary or not well and bail me out. You know, not even a person. Nobody trusts her. I burned so many bridges. I burned everybody. And, you know, I was a slave to alcohol. I called the treatment center that I went to one time, the same time. I called the director and I said, look, and I didn't get a scholarship program, something they kind of let like indigent people in sometimes. I said, look, I got nothing. I got nowhere to go. I'm going to die. He's like, let me think about it. And before he hung up the phone, he's like, you know, I just better get up here now. You know, you can tell. And I went up there. And by this point, he was very, very against me. And look, I've given up on the debating society. You know, I cease fighting anyone or anything. But at this time, he was very, very contemporary AA. He was very, very, and he did not like to hear anything about anybody working the steps in any kind of active pace, or really working the steps at all. You know, it was like, you know, you're working step three for whatever. I mean, I don't really know how to do that, but, you know, I was turning it over for a long time. But I started working with some people in there, and things were starting to move, but I wasn't exactly doing the right thing in there. And where's the gratitude? I'm here for free. No money. I wasn't following the rules, and I ended up getting kicked out of the street. You know? And so here I am, 3.5 months of sobriety, and what do? And drive. And you know, I opened a book, and I saw a meeting in there near my hometown that had the letter DB next to it. I'm like, I like the literature. You know? Let me go check it out. You know, and I met some people there. I went to other literature-based meetings. I met a sponsor who, you know, knew if I didn't get connected quick, I was gonna die. And, you know, after a couple meetings, you know, I'm writing inventory, and I'm sharing it with him. I'm going out and cleaning up the wreckage of my path that I started making in my last couple relapses, and I was rocking it. That's all I can say. I wasn't brought up in any kind of religious household. To describe this power that came over me from being in that lonely place, from having no solution, I mean, the people that know what I'm talking about are not in their heads. The question I ask is like, you've either had this experience or you haven't. And the people who've had this experience know exactly what I'm talking about. When all of a sudden, my little plans and design, things in my life, it's freedom. It's an absolute freedom. The reason I came in was because I didn't have anywhere to go, but because I was a slave to alcohol, and that problem was removed. Completely lifted. And it was the absolute greatest feeling that I knew that today, I'm not going to be picking up a drink. And I don't have this desire. I can go anywhere I want to. And I wasn't working at the time. I was collecting a little bit of unemployment. So I'm, you know what I mean? I have this little beat-up truck, and I want to pick up whoever. You know, I'm 4 months sober, and I'm sitting in the meeting, and, you know, there's like a little new guy behind me. He's like, how much time? I'm like, look, and this is my story. He's like, how much time? I'm like, oh, you know what I'm talking about? I'm reeling him in. And he's interested in the steps. And he's like, how much time do you have? And I said, all day. You know what I mean? I was just in fear that he wouldn't want me to sponsor him. I knew I was going to die. I knew I was going to absolutely die. So he's like, oh, I left the Hammer House there. I'm like, okay. And this guy, kid don't even know that. He saved my life. And he's like, well, I got a bike. I'm like, in the back of the truck, let's go. Boom. We go back to this halfway house, and here I am. I'm back and open a book with this kid, and it was unbelievable. Unbelievable. You know, because I knew my primary purpose. I knew that if I didn't grow spiritually through work and self-sacrifice for others, I'm not going to survive the trials most positive. I knew that their experience, the first 100 that they knew that their experience was that working with a newcomer will work every time. And it was freedom. I'm telling you, it was absolute freedom. And I'll say, I don't know where this kid is today. I was at an Oxford House with the same kid at some point, and you know, I don't know if I think he shared an inventory with me, but didn't complete his amends. He's gone. You know, we've seen him you know, a few months after that, you know what I mean, walking a different way because he was, you know what I mean, like, and I see people all the time. I'll tell you what, people who do the work and have this experience, and my sobriety, by the way, is October of 07. So, I mean, we're talking about short experience with this thing so far. But my experience so far is, people work the steps and have this experience, get sober, stay sober, live happy, do it, great. Those who don't. And that's the only thing I see. Maybe they go away and go join some other group somewhere, but I don't see them. And I see a lot of people relapse, and I see a lot of people die. And it's baffling. The power that I've been given through this process, you know, I hear a speaker not too long ago talk about, like, his new mantra is not, like, I have to go do this or I have to go do that. It's I get to go do this. And I look at my life now, and not at all, I can't wait to share with you guys. I'm going to do, like, 10 minutes, like, almost open inventory with you guys. I said I am. But for the most part, you know, I know there are moments that I know that I actually am on borrowed time. That my purpose now on earth is not for, you know, my plans and designs, my possessions, what kind of car I drive. But, you know, every moment of my life now is a gift. And I owe it all to God. For someone who never believes in God, it's not like through this alcoholic, it only really worked through a little bit of, like, hope that this might work, and then it was result and effect. If I didn't have the effect, I can't have that, like, blind faith all the time. If I never saw a little bit of it, and this is just my story, I start seeing results, you know, some quickly, some slowly, but big time, for me, you wanted to die for a minute, a result of just, like, feeling good was huge, even for a moment, and that's all, and that's what kept me coming back, you know, and so I started through experience, you know what I mean, so for a while, I wasn't very effective with newcomers, or anybody for that matter. I was going into meetings, you know what I mean, telling you that you're working the steps completely off, well, I'd say it a different way, of course, but I was like, you know what I mean, this is what you need to do, and you know, like, in the book talks about, like, Bill being evangelistic, like, he went, nobody got sober, you know, talking about the spiritual experience, talking about, you know, and I'm telling you about, you know, this is the way you have to do it, blah, 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 blah. And when I get honest about it, I'm trying to fill my ego and tell you how much I know that I can quote paragraph and verse, that I know the history behind this and you don't. And it was keeping me sick. It was keeping me very, very sick. And I wasn't helping anybody. And this is only through experience and people like you guys telling me what I'm doing. You know, they're like, look, this is my experience with this. You've been given the gift of being armed with the facts. You know, you might want to reread that chapter working with others, you know? Or you might want to listen to our experience when it comes to this. You know, had these promises come through, cease fighting anyone or anything, even the misconceptions of our fellowship, you know, how are you being helpful to this person? Not being helpful to that person. You know, so here I am, I'm going to badmouth you, but I'm not going to come up and help you, you know? And that was my story. In the past 18 months, I've been given so many gifts. I started sponsoring a young guy who I thought, you know what I mean? Like, I'll be honest with you, I put him in my phone as Sick Dan. You know, like that's how I remember. Maybe I had multiple Dans, and I put him Sick because this kid was just so old ideas, misconceptions, this and that. Was the biggest bullshit. No, he was like me. You know, exactly. I call him Sick Dan. And this young guy, you know, he's a seeker, man. You rock it through the steps, this kid. Is, you know, not that he does everything perfectly, but you know, he's a seeker, and he's absolutely had this experience, and he absolutely wants to pass on to some of those sponsors, people going to commitments, you know, going here, going there, driving his car around all creation. And I know we remember him, you know. It's the greatest thing in the world when you see somebody that, you know, you play just a small, I'm not saying I caused it, but a small part, you know, I was used as an instrument to help this kid. And to see him now turning around helping someone else, it's actually the greatest blessing that really will happen to me. It's a miraculous thing to see. I'm the kind of guy who, like, slept on the street for a little while. I'm the kind of guy who, like, you know, eat really, really, really nice meals. I'm, like, all, you know, I'm all over the place, but, like, to see, I've had some kids in my life. And I'm not saying it for any reason, but, like, to see little things like that happen in my life and that I'm actually helpful today, I've recovered and been given the power to help others, and it has nothing to do with what I've done. And it's the most amazing thing in the world. he came back from with us this weekend. You know, he for my birthday he gave me a book on meditation. And 6 months over, now it's the last 15 minutes. I'm being honest about me. The effect produced by working with others is unbelievable. So much so that I have and do slack on prayer, meditation, and inventory. You know? And I'm not saying it's a good experience, I'm saying not. You know, for a while, I'm getting this effect, and it's almost like... And it's almost like my mind tells me that as long as I'm in a position of neutrality, and I'm not obsessing about alcohol, and I'm turning my attention to other people I can help, that doesn't matter how my relationships are going. It doesn't matter how I'm treating people at work. You know, my devotions to God, my gratitude, doesn't necessarily need to be there today. I can delay speaking, you know what I mean, for another day. And what happens? Well, in the third step, prayer, it's talking about our actor. And, you know, me being the actor, me also the director. And me turning around and pretty much self-will, my ego, my arrogance are boundless. And I do and say all sorts of things coming from self and fear and all these kind of things. And then turn around when you call me out on it and justify it and find reasons. And at my best moments, like it talks about, I'm a producer of confusion rather than harmony. And that's not my best day. That's my best moments. You know? Like an intensive talks about, it talks about continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, fear, when these crop up. It doesn't say if these crop up. When these crop up, you know? And these equations, you know what I mean? I wasn't taking. You know, but I'll put my AA jacket on and say how great I'm doing. Let me tell you a really quick story. Let's take a look. I don't remember why we were fighting. Me and my girlfriend were in the car. And we're fighting, and she's driving like a maniac, so I tell her, you're driving like a maniac, you're going to crush the bread. You know, we got a whole thing of groceries in the back. You're going to crush the bread. I don't remember what we were fighting about, but... I tell her to back the truck up. So, you know, we back it up so it's closer and whatever, and she just pulls it right in. She grabs a bunch of the groceries, runs inside, throws them on the table. I run over to the bag, because I want to take the crushed bread out and put it right in her face and be like, look, I told you. I go in the other bag, and I take the bread out and put it on the table, and I'm so disgusted. The bread was fine. So what do I do? I put my fist in it. So much that I put my fist in it that you can see where the knuckle marks are. And now I gotta press the knuckle marks and kind of like get it out of there. And I showed it to her. Because I want to be right. And I want the effect produced by me being right. And I show her, you know, and what were my motives out of that? You know what I mean? And I say, four days later, through inventory and talking to my sponsor, 4 days, I'm so sick. Why would I want to sit in that kind of emotional pain? 4 days I go without getting on. You know what I mean? And coming, you know, look, you know, cleaning up the wreckage of my past, making amends. And that's not me. I'm just letting you know, like, that's not me. I'd rather keep things on an even keel by not telling. You know, that thing was already forgotten. But I knew I caused the harm, you know? And even as, you know, I should say even as small, but it wasn't a small thing, you know? It's, you know, my dishonesty. And all these things, and it's just, and it's only through this sponsor, it's only the grace of God. I ended up getting a new sponsor to take me through the work again. It's definitely not the approach that I was used to. Letting go of my old ideas through working with another sponsor. Yeah, I mean, I don't know how God puts these people in my life, but he kind of calls me out of my crap, and he doesn't, and he fishes for it. Sometimes it might not be the truth, but he really, really, really fishes for it to get, you know, like to get to the fourth column, you know, and all that stuff. And you know, he gives me considerations that I don't normally say. I'll tell you how sick I am. I was sponsorless in AA, you know, coming in, having this experience, and just saying like, you know, oh yeah, I know it's just in the 12 and 12, but where does it say that we continue to be sponsored, you you know, in the big book. You know, I would justify by saying my purpose is to turn around and help others. Continue to do 10-11, help others. I don't need to be a parent or a sponsor. I do inventory with people. I follow the directions outlined in the big book. But, this is just my story. And I just want to say that I'm so glad that I can come in a room and share how, you know, I fall short. I'm a baby in this process. I'm a baby when it comes to spirituality. I'll hear certain things throughout the day, and it will blow my mind and my heart and my soul, and it will open me up to whole new ideas. As long as I'm open-minded to new concepts, knowing that I could be completely wrong, it's the most unbelievable freeing experience. And I really, really, really can't wait to see what tomorrow will bring. The guy who didn't want to wake up in the morning is now excited to see what the next day will bring. It's an unbelievable feat. And I absolutely owe it to the fellowship. I absolutely owe it to the steps, the program. I owe it to my family. You know, I owe it to my girlfriend who can call me out on my stuff. Doesn't take it lightly, but you know what I mean? It's almost like God puts people in my life that my life isn't perfect. You know, on paper, things aren't perfect in my life. But when I get honest about it and truthful about it, it's better than anything I could have planned. Better than anything I could have planned. And it's not because I have a bunch of money. I'll tell you what, I am so in debt, I wish I was broke. So much in debt, I wish I was broke. Peter pops up, you know. And I know he's good with it. But I also know that a faith alone in God isn't going to solve my problems today. Just a faith alone. You know? I better take action. I better kind of let go of some of my fear with God's help and call my credit card company and say, hey, what's the best kind of deal we can work out? You know, look, this is my situation. And I'm cutting these deals. I'm cutting these hardship deals. I'm doing this. The path is getting laid out. And when I see it, I sit back and chuckle. Because, you know, this is something that I thought was going to be with me forever. This is something that I thought I was going to have to, declare bankruptcy for. That I'm never going to own a home, never going to get a car, never going to get a loan, never going to... It's continued. You know, sponsor guy who talks about, I have to, maybe you should get a job, you know? Generation. He said, I got felonies. I'm like, oh, really? Oh. Maybe God has something in store for you that you don't know. Maybe on your way to the job that you know that's going to background check you, something happens. You don't know what happened. Are you God? Is everything or nothing, my friend? Everything or nothing. And this is my ego is boundless for me. I can go 1 minute with complete, absolute faith in God, everything. I'm just skip it. And something will happen. My disease will come out this way or this way, and all of a sudden my agnosticism comes back. And all of a sudden, my first response to most things isn't a spiritual solution. It's not. It really, really isn't. I would look for other streets. I look to see how I can maneuver. And then I almost chuckle. And that's why people are such a blessing. That's why I. You know, I try to learn new things. I try to seek with some literature. Sit in my car. Part of my inventory, I resent against Hazleton. And I'm bizarre. My inventories are absolutely nuts. But some forms of literature that I got, and my part of a chuckle consideration of Nance is now to read this damn book. And, I'm reading it, I'm starting to see, some really cool stuff, coming in. And that's just, letting go of my old ideas, not being a slave to my emotions. And it's only through God's help. Because, doesn't it say, I can't even reduce my self-centeredness, much by wishing and trying on my own power, I had to have God's help. So, when I try to do things my way, nothing comes out. Nothing comes out right, you know? And now I got to make amends, which sucks. This fellowship is absolutely amazing. You know, where we were driving here, and I couldn't believe, there wasn't even a place for me to stop and go to the bathroom. And for some way, 150 people can come together in this group, you know, and and really share God's gift, God's solution, come together. You know, we can greet, people will greet me at the door, people will share, people are smiling, you know, living life. And I wasn't trying to knock like this area, but it was just like we were kind of on the way.
Yeah.
Where are we? I'm like, the GPS, right? And all of a sudden you just see a massive amount of people congregating outside laughing. And I knew I was home. I knew I was absolutely home. All right. Well, I don't want to keep on babbling. I know this is I'm kind of cutting it short, right? 5 minutes.
Yeah, you're good.
All right. But really, guys, I think that's all I have. Thank you very much.